You're with Cape Talk.
You're with Cape Talk.
Time to talk motoring with Chiro De Siena of Cars.co.za, who's back with me in studio and standing by for your questions. Just a reminder that you're welcome to ask almost anything. Please don't ask for a valuation of your vehicle or the one that you're thinking of buying, but otherwise, it's open season. You can direct your question by phone call to 021-446-0567 or leave us a voice note on 072-567-1567. Clearly, you survived the Knysna potholes. Chiro, welcome back. How was the Simola Hill climb?
Ah, Pippa, it was phenomenal. I mean, I've been really lucky to go see Formula One at Spa-Francorchamps in Belgium, probably, you know, like sort of the holy grail of motorsport.
The rather wet holy grail, this time around, but yeah.
And I mean, you know, without a word of a lie, I enjoy Simola more. It's just a much more intimate event. The fact that you've got access to the pits as a media, or you can buy pit access as a VIP pass in normal years. So you get really close to the machinery, and it's the cars launch right in front of you, you know. Oh. So you're not sort of sitting on a grandstand 100 meters away. And I mean, when those cars, there's this technology called anti-lag, where basically between gear shifts, you want the turbo to keep spinning, so the engine dumps fuel into the exhaust, pretty much. It's very eco-friendly.
Yeah.
And it creates this explosion. And I mean, you're so close, you can actually feel the sound, you know, when it goes to your chest, you know. And so, I mean, a very visceral motoring experience. And I think this is kind of the future of motorsport, in my opinion, because these sort of boutique events that don't have a particularly large footprint and sort of keep the traditional idea of motorsport alive without having too much of a negative impact on the environment and everything around them. And I know that a huge effort is the team at the Knysna Speed Festival go through a huge effort to make sure that the place is as is or as they found it.
Yeah.
So huge kudos to them, and I absolutely loved. I got asked to live commentate on the live stream, which we carried on the Cars.co.za channel, and we had about 50,000 views, which makes it one of the biggest streaming events in the country, actually.
Sure.
Yeah, and they said, "Would you like to commentate?" I said yes, and then they used me for about 6 hours a day, so I was exhausted. I was exhausted afterwards, but it was very special, and it was my sixth hill climb. I have raced in it before, so I know it quite well. And I just think that if you do get a chance, and if you are interested in motorsports or interested in cars in general, I would say make a trip to Knysna for this event. It's coming back in May, which is very exciting. And hopefully, COVID permitting, there'll be spectators allowed again, because this year it was a lockdown event.
Sure.
There were only, I think, 500 people on site, basically. So all the mechanics, all the drivers, their family members, the media, the pit crew, the marshals, etc. It had to be under 500 for the law.
Yeah.
And so it was a very limited event, and we really did miss the crowds. It was quite sad not to see everyone clapping and enjoying themselves.
Well, there was nevertheless a race and a winner. Who was King of the Hill this year?
So they named three Kings of the Hill. One was a gentleman called Peter Zeeley in a highly modified Toyota MR2. I mean, genetically, it's about as close to an MR2 as I am now. It's been so highly modified. But incredible. He beat some real monsters to take the modified saloon title. André Bezuidenhout, who is the sort of mild-mannered advocate, but he gets into a single seat race car, which looks like a Formula One car, and goes up the hill and just sets lap record after lap record after lap record. So he shattered the lap record this year. The lap record is now in the 34s, and I don't know. So covering 2Ks up a hill in 34 seconds, the average speed, starting from zero to crossing the line, is 196 kilometers an hour, average. So it's just phenomenal. I mean, it's a bullet up there. And so he was, he took lap record and then his class. And then the stock road car class was a gent called JP van der Velde in a Porsche GT3 RS.
Awesome. I'm so glad you got to do it, Chiro. And a friend of mine who was watching the whole day said to pass on his congrats that your commentary was excellent.
Oh, wow.
So, I missed it myself.
Big smile on my face. Thank you.
Glad you enjoyed it. Well, thanks for letting us be part of it, even though it was such an intimate boutique event this time around. Good to know that it's back in May, and fingers crossed, hopefully, with some spectators this time. Okay. Chiro, sorry, just before we leave racing things, Formula E Grand Prix, I think, is the next big sort of racing event on the motorsport calendar for us. How excited or not excited are you?
No, very. It's a world-class event, confirmed for Cape Town for 2023. 2003, I stand to be corrected. Could be next year, actually. I must admit, I haven't done terribly much research. I saw the headlines and I got happy, and that I'm just sort of moved on with my life, and I'll focus on it when it arrives or closer to the date. But no, it's there's a lot of money's been poured into Formula E. Porsche went in, Audi, Mercedes, Jaguar in. The drivers are world class. The cars are very quick. They look good, and there's quite an interesting approach to the way the race happens. For instance, I'm not sure if this is just a gimmick, but you can vote for your favorite driver, and the driver who gets the most votes gets a speed boost, right, which he actually can use. He can, you know, hit it on his steering wheel and get this fan, they call it a fan boost. So I don't know, they're trying though, you know, they're trying to sort of integrate and build engagement in racing. And but I think they've actually got their work cut out for them, because Formula One is experiencing a bit of a resurgence. Went through a bit of a dip. Mm. And they, even by their admission, viewership figures, yeah, dropped big time. But I don't know. I mean, even I'm interested in Formula One again, which is...
Listen, the Schumacher documentary is coming out on the 15th. Yes. I bet that's going to see a whole fresh surge of interest again. And 26th February 2022 is, fingers crossed, when Formula E is supposed to happen in Cape Town. We don't set too much store on any kind of future planning in the current circumstances, but that's what's on the menu at this point. Okay, let's move along before we take any questions, because they're already coming in on the voice note and the SMS line. But very quickly, the other piece of motoring news that caught my attention in the past week or so was Volkswagen announcing that they will be phasing out manual transition by 2023 in some of the models already.
Yeah, it makes sense. Autos are getting so good. They used to be, you know, we used to call them old slush boxes, and there was sort of these like four speed, you know.
Do that again?
Yeah, that was quite good actually, yeah. Off the cuff. And they were generally actually not particularly efficient. However, the technology and the mapping and everything has just moved so far ahead, and you know, there's now 10 speed gearboxes, which means that the you sort of always have the car in the right gear for the most efficiency. So they are now more efficient, you know, than the average human driver, which is what a manual gearbox requires.
Yeah.
and so that argument's kind of got out the window. Also, I think, well, COVID sort of spanned traffic a little bit, which is probably the one upside of COVID. But the more people sit in traffic, the less I think they want to drive manual cars. You know, there's this great technology which can only be integrated with an auto. So, for instance, traffic crawl, which a lot of cars have these days, doesn't work on a manual.
Okay.
So, for instance, you know, that sort of bumper-to-bumper traffic crawl in stop-start traffic, that can only be integrated with an auto. So you see where the sort of safety tech is moving and the convenience tech is moving, and just doesn't leave much place for manuals. So I think where we'll still see manuals, though, will be sports cars and 4x4s, but even that is on its way. I mean, for instance, I don't think you can buy a manual Toyota Supra, for instance, which is like one of the most legendary sports cars ever.
Okay.
You just can't buy a manual one, you know. And then we had this really tricky issue a couple of years ago with Cars Awards, where the judges had put a manual BMW M2 forward for the finalists to be judged at Girotech, at our testing ground. We could not find one in the country.
Oh, wow.
So technically it was on sale, but there weren't any,
yeah.
You know. So and I'm pretty sure you can't actually buy a manual M2 either anymore. So yeah, it seems like that's where the trends are going, and sort of why spend R&D budget if no one wants them, you know.
So follow up question, I'm sitting with a newly learner licensed driver in the house who has yet to have her first driving lesson. Do we even bother teaching her to drive a manual, or is the future all automatic?
Such a great question. I'm not sure. I think in 5 to 10 years time, I'm not sure anyone will be driving a manual on a day-to-day basis, unless they really want one and they have to go actually, you know, search for one, or they really like driving sports cars during the week, which is actually quite painful, to be honest. But I like the idea that if you're a driver, you can drive any transmission, so that you can, if there's ever, I don't know, an emergency or whatever it is, and you need to jump in a car and move it or get it out of the way or whatever the case may be, or use it to ferry someone to hospital or whatever the case may be, that you know how to operate the car. So no, I would still say there's value in it. personally.
If nothing else, she doesn't end up being that contestant in The Amazing Race who doesn't know how to drive the manual car. I laugh at them every year. Okay, yeah. Thanks. Interesting conversation, Chiro. Appreciate the feedback. All right, one last thing to do before we take any questions, and that is ask what you've been driving this week. You've got some info for us on a brand new hybrid.
Finally, there is an entry-level hybrid that I can actually call an entry-level hybrid in this country. Yay. Available. I'm so excited. Now, when I say the price, don't get a heart attack. And this is in the context of when a new C-Class base price is about 900,000 Rand for a C-Class entry-level. So when I say the price, don't get a heart attack. But for 419,000 Rand, you can now own a Toyota Corolla hybrid. And it's got probably the best hybrid tech in the world, because Toyota pretty much invented hybrids. Mm-hmm. And if I'm not mistaken, actually they're responsible for the word hybrid being used in motoring parlance today. So they're very good at this, and their hybrids sell well in other countries, because what they do is they take the same tech and they use it in Lexus products and in Toyota products. So the tech is they spend a lot of money on it, because it goes into a bunch of platforms. So all of this tech and all of this know-how and like 25 years or something of R&D development since they released the first Prius is now available in a Corolla for about 400,000 Rand. I mean, the entry level bottom Corolla is 391. So for an extra 30 grand, you're in a Corolla hybrid. And to put it into perspective, the next cheapest hybrid that I could find on the market was the new Honda Fit hybrid, which I've actually just been driving as well, for 469. So it's 50,000 Rand cheaper than a Honda Fit. However, I would say the Honda Fit is a little bit better spec'd. So for instance, in the Corolla hybrid, you don't even get leather seats, right? So it's back to cloth. But nothing wrong with that actually in winter, I must say. Or on a hot summer's day.
And a very hot summer, I was about to say. Yeah.
Only for temperate climates, leather seats actually. So, and I drove it home yesterday and I was blown away. It was so quiet. It was super efficient. I averaged 4.8 liters to the 100 going home, which is mega for a petrol-powered car. Look, you can get less out of a small diesel motor. However, hybrids are cleaner. Diesels, it's just not a great, it's not a sustainable solution for motoring going forward because of the NOx and the soot, the actual physical particles that they release. So we are trying to get away from diesels, and you're seeing that in Paris and European cities where diesels are almost banned completely already because of the
emissions.
The emissions and the threat to public health. So petrol hybrids are the way to go before we sort of transition over to electricity. And Toyota's really trying to bring hybrid to the market here. So they've simultaneously launched the RAV4 hybrid, which I haven't driven yet, 550,000 Rand. And that is a really good car by all accounts. I've read a couple of overseas reports and it gets glowing reports overseas. So you now have two choices from the Toyota stable as well. And then coming up soon, which I think quite a lot of people are going to be excited about, is the Corolla Cross, which will be a sort of small, medium-sized SUV from Toyota, built in South Africa, which is quite exciting as well. And that's going to be, that hybrid is also apparently going to be well-priced. So this is a sort of a warm-up from Toyota, an appetizer for the main meal. But I'm just really happy that this tech is now available at a palatable price.
Yeah. Fantastic. Yeah. Thanks so much. Well, lucky you getting your hands on one to drive so quickly. And keep us posted once you've had a go at the RAV4 hybrid to let us know.
Definitely. We'll review it here. Yeah.
Great. Okay. With that, we move to voice notes, WhatsApps. And let's start with an SMS, because Giles was very quick to get his question through. Giles in Somerset West would like to know your thoughts on the new Kia Pegas 1-4X Auto.
The Pegas. Yeah, apparently it's Pegas like Pegas. Vegas.
Okay.
Not my favorite car name. I think maybe they should have just given me a call. I would have consulted on that one. not the best car in the segment, to be honest. Okay. It really feels like one of those cars built to a price. And look, it is affordable. I think pricing starts at under 200,000 Rand, which these days is actually very impressive. And it is quite practical. It's got a lot of boot space, backseat space is not bad. The spec is not too bad either. Bluetooth for hands-free calling and music. And I'm trying to remember if it had a touchscreen infotainment system or not. I don't think it did. Or maybe you can upspec it. But a little bit of a swing and a miss for me from Kia, to be honest. I think their Picanto is a much better product. And if I was going to buy a new Pegas and staying in the Kia brand, I'd go for a second-hand Kia Rio. to be honest. The Kia Rio is really nice. And if you find maybe a two-year-old one, you'll have 3 years left on the warranty, which is good. So I think it's one of those cases where, it's a budget car at a budget-friendly price, but I think there's better stuff out there, especially on the used market.
Okay, thanks so much for the honest feedback. Hope that's helpful to you, Giles. Let's take a listen to a voice note.
Hi, Pippa. It's Alison from Nortok. I wanted to ask Chiro about a vehicle dilemma that my husband and I have. Our boys are moving on and they have their own vehicles and get out and about quite happily on their own. And we would like a vehicle that's sort of a mid-range off-road 4x4 option in a budget price range. We don't want to spend a fortune. And we have owned a Terios in the past. And recently we took that Terios up to the Namaqua 4x4 Eco Trail, and it still was fantastic, even though it's almost 10 years old. Is there any vehicle that is similar to the Terios in that it has 4x4 capabilities, but it's a mid-size vehicle that can seat four people, but is also a vehicle that you can use out and about town? The Jimny is cute, very expensive, I think, for what you get. And it's tiny. It's really, really tiny. I don't think my husband and I and our dogs can fit into that. So I'd really appreciate your help. Thank you so much.
Thanks, Alison. Oh, you know, I agree with you. The Jimny is so cute. But I know you've said the same thing before, Chiro. It comes at a price. What would you recommend for Alison?
The issue, I think, the gap that the Terios left in the market was that it was a very affordable all-wheel drive car, 4x4 car.
Okay.
And I think some people are still sad that Daihatsu left the market, 10 years ago now? Maybe about 8 years ago. And it's going to become increasingly hard to source parts, and you have to start importing. So Terios have actually held their value quite well. And when they appear on the market, they disappear just as quickly.
Yeah.
So they're still out there. That's and if you're looking if you're looking to replace it, you maybe set an alert on our site so that if one pops up, you know, or on Gumtree or something, and then, you know, jump on it. All that being said, the tricky thing about the market is that South Africa's moved to crossovers and SUVs, and the smaller ones, to save costs and for better packaging so that there's more space in the rear and more boot space, the manufacturers go with front-wheel drive platforms.
Okay.
So, for instance, the new Toyota Urban Cruiser and the Vitara Brezza, for instance, from Suzuki, which just to remind listeners is exactly the same car.
Yeah.
Those are front wheel drive. So and while they do have fairly decent ground clearance, front wheel drive is probably the worst setup for off-roading. You're just not going to go anywhere quickly, basically, especially if it's slippery. So so that's just not an option, really. So the smallest car and the most affordable car that I can think of with all-wheel drive is the normal Suzuki Vitara. And I've actually just helped my bestie, my BFF.
Mm-hmm.
I just helped her shop for cars. So she was going to go for the Vitara Brezza. And I said to her, she was going to go brand new. So I said, rather look for like a two-year-old Vitara. It's much more car. The Brezza is kind of like an urban runaround. It's good for like in the city, but I think, you know, 6 hours in it to Knysna or something. It's really made for that. Vitara is a bit more comfortable, a bit larger, a bit better on the open road, a bit more boot space. And she found a great one, a two-year-old one, for about the same price as a new Vitara Brezza, actually a low-spec Vitara Brezza, and she got a high-spec Vitara with low mileage. So there is that route to go. I'm racking my brain trying to think what else would be a small, affordable all-wheel drive vehicle, because like I say, most of the platforms these days are front-wheel drive.
Well, Steph has just messaged to say that he or she's choosing between the Daihatsu Terios and a Subaru XV 2014 or 15.
Yeah, the XV when it came out was actually quite expensive. I'm trying to think, let me quickly consult the cars.co.za app and see if the XV is still listed as a new car. I'm not actually sure that it is. No, it is still listed. So, but base price is 445. So, you know, you're almost double what you're spending on something like a Vitara Brezza or an Urban Cruiser at that stage. Look, if you're just going to tackle urban roads and you do want to buy a new car, something like an Urban Cruiser, it will actually be fine. The ground clearance is actually quite decent. So and front wheel drive is fine on a gravel road. You know, just take it easy and take don't think you're in the Dakar or something. Mm-hmm. so that is handy. That ground clearance is handy. But like I say, anything more than a gravel road, and then you're in quite a bit of trouble. So I would be careful of that. And as we're talking this afternoon, I'll rack my brain, try to think if there's a small all wheel drive car, sort of sub 300,000 mark. And if something pops up, I'll shout.
Okay. Otherwise, we can always give feedback next week as well, Chira.
Yeah.
Just a lovely message in from James on the back of the automatic manual conversation. James tells me he watched an episode of America's Dumbest Criminals where two bank robbers were actually caught exactly this way. Neither of them knew how to drive the hijacked getaway car because it was a manual. there's just a lovely comment to that story, isn't there, James? Thanks for the smile. Let's squeeze in one last voice note, I think. Let's take a listen.
Hi, Pippa and Chira. Great. I love listening to this segment all the time. But anyway, let's get on with the question. The question that I have is, I have a 2019 Ranger XL, the one up from the base. And I bought it as a sort of a stepping stone in the hopes of one day being able to afford, you know, trade up and get probably the XLT, but ultimately actually what I'd like to settle on is the Wildtrak. However, there's a number, as we all know, of bucky choices out there, none more so now. But you know, you've got, I'm pretty au fait with all the major brands, but the one that's really put a spanner in the works for me, and I know that you've spoken about this before, Chira, is the P series. And the XLT or the Wildtrak that I want to kind of settle on, I'm 50 years old and I want that to kind of be, if not my last, a very long-term vehicle. I'm not going to trade up from there. And if I were to go to P series, it would be the same thing. My concern is reliability and proven, you know, track record. And I just want your honest sort of opinion on whether that should be a consideration, considering that I want to keep it for, you know, 10, 12 years afterwards. Many thanks. This is Richard, Table View.
Thanks, Richard. Sure. Sorry, very short time left, but any feedback to give Richard?
So tough to comment on reliability. Look, as a product, I mean, it's better spec than a 3 million rand Range Rover. The tech and comfort is just phenomenal in that P series. And you can get a top spec one for the bottom spec price of one of the more established players. However, I would say that, you know, GWM are really putting their money where their mouth is. A decent 5-year warranty on there. And if I'm not mistaken, if you buy from Thorpe, I'm pretty sure I saw an ad for this for their Haval and GWM products, they'll add a 2-year warranty to that for free. So then you're 7 years down the road with warranty protection. And that's pretty cool. So, you know, hopefully something does go wrong, they fix it for you, no questions asked, and you're back on the road. All that being said, I do think it's a good idea right now, if you're in the bucky segment, to really shop around. I think there's about 8 different brands to choose from right now, the last time I counted, maybe 9 actually, all with different offerings. So maybe it's a question we pick up next week.
But well, I've actually got an email in from Gillian, who's also got a bucky question. So why don't we do that, Chira, and say we'll start next week with a review of the bucky offerings that are out there on the market at the moment. And Gillian, I'm sorry we didn't get to your specific question today, but if you can hold on another week, we'll do it next Wednesday.
Yeah, great. Looking forward to it.
Me too, Chira. Chat to you then. Thank you so much.